Welcome to We've Got Issues. I'm Joshua Holland, and Happy New Year. This is our first show of the year. What a week. You know, 2021 is starting out kind of stressful. Actually, it's been a remarkable roller coaster. You know, I did not allow myself to get excited or anticipate wins in the Georgia Senate runoffs. And it was on Wednesday, there was just this remarkable high and low, this shift, right? I woke up and I felt optimistic for the first time in as long as I can remember. I felt a sense of optimism. And it's maddening that the neo-Confederate movement did not give us like a day to enjoy our unexpected victory before rioting in the nation's capital. And we're going to talk to Addie Stan from Right Wing Watch about that today. But before we do, I want to talk about the Georgia Senate wins a little bit. So we'll go from high to low, just like yesterday. So I think my read on how this is going to play out is that there are not enough votes in the Senate to kill the filibuster. And there may be down the road. I think that basically Biden is going to have to, after the campaign that he mounted, he's going to have to give Republicans a chance to obstruct everything that Democrats do by requiring 60 votes for everything. And I think that it's a safe bet that that will happen, you know, judging from not only past experience, but from the, you know, based on the fact that the conservative media, the conservative messaging apparatus is very good at disciplining Republican lawmakers. And, you know, they have a very clear punishment system set up for working with Democrats that will make it very hard for them to do so. You know, the Republican base, who is convinced that Joe Biden did not win legitimately, is not going to let them work with the president again that they thought stole the election. So we're not going to get rid of the filibuster. And that means that a lot of people are going to be disappointed. People who wanted things like Medicare for all, or even the Biden healthcare plan is unlikely. But I don't want to underplay how huge it is that Democrats control the Senate and the House and the presidency, because you can do a lot when you control all of that. First of all, you have you control the agenda. You control what bills come up for a vote. You control the oversight process. This is extremely important. It means that, you know, instead of investigating Hillary Clinton's emails for the next 4 years, we will investigate things like the failure to secure the nation's capital this week. We will have committee chairs like Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio. He's going to take over banking. Bernie Sanders is going to be in charge of the budget committee. You know, you're going to have a judiciary shift from Lindsey Graham to Dick Durbin. And one of the biggest things that, and I think most consequential things about winning the Senate, is that they're going to be able to assemble a team. Biden is going to be able to just assemble a team, appoint who he wants. And that's extremely important, because they're going to have, in all likelihood, they're going to have 2 years before the right wing base is activated and they lose control of the House. That's a very, very likely scenario. So if you have to spend a lot of time fighting over every appointment, that's time that you're not able to spend advancing your agenda. It's a big deal, very big deal. So, you know, it was huge winning those two Senate seats. really huge. And it's a game changer. And I just wish that we had time to celebrate that victory before everything went to hell. Anyway, we're going to talk about the events this week with Addie Stan. Stay tuned. We'll take a quick break and come right back.
Yeah, look, here's where I am. I think there's no question that America would be better off if the president would resign or be removed from office, and if Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, would conduct a peaceful transition of power over the next 13 days until President Biden is sworn in.
That was Larry Hogan, Maryland governor, Republican, calling for Trump's removal from office. Welcome back. I'm joined now by Addie Stan. Addie is the executive editor at Right Wing Watch. Is that right?
No, I'm a director.
Director.
Director of Right Wing Watch, which is a project of People for the American Way.
Adele Stan, director of Right Wing Watch, which is a project of People for the American Way. I used to be a fellow at People for the American Way, actually. Way, way back, a long time ago. Yeah. Hi, Addie. How are you?
I'm well, Joshua. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I was saying during the introduction that it's been such a roller coaster this week. Highs and lows are just coming one after the other. It's just crazy. Like I was feeling pretty good yesterday morning. We're recording this on Thursday, of course. I was feeling pretty good after those two Georgia Senate victories, unexpected for me. And
they're amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And then we have a bloody insurrection in the Capitol.
How about that?
Crazy. Let's just start. Tell us what your day looked like. How you were in the Capitol.
I wasn't in the Capitol. I was outside the Capitol because the only journos inside the Capitol were congressional reporters who have the special media tags.
Yep.
So I was outside, and I work and live very near the Capitol. And I honestly did not plan to go over there. I knew that they would be marching there. I mean, it's not as if any of this should have been a surprise, to tell you the truth.
Yes.
Except that their ability to breach the Capitol was. But everybody knew they were marching there. They had, you know, put that out on social media. And there had been numerous calls to violence on social media in right-wing circles. So anyway, watching live streams of their gathering at the Ellipse and Trump's very unhinged speech. And then the next, so the Trump speech is over, they're marching. I switch over to C-SPAN and I see that these guys are marching through Statuary Hall in the Capitol Rotunda with flags on poles. And I'm thinking, how did they get in with flags on poles? I mean, if these guys so much as find a banner folded up in your briefcase, right, when you're entering the Capitol, they take it away from you. They take away a bottle of water from you.
Yeah.
So how on earth did that happen? So I said, well, I better go over there. And as I was gathering my stuff, I heard the sirens from the ambulances going over there. And by the time I got there, they had just removed the woman who had been shot. And there are just masses of Trumpers singing the national anthem, you know, on filling the steps in the portico of the east side of the Capitol building. And there were no law enforcement to be found anywhere. I mean, they had those metal, you know, bicycle rack type barriers up along one side of the street, but there was nobody staffing them. So, you know, everybody, including me, just slipped between them. But there was no, there was plenty of police vehicles on the ground, but from the Capitol Police, but there was no police. It was the eeriest feeling imaginable, Joshua, because as you know, you were a Washington reporter. I mean, on a normal day at the U.S. Capitol, there's, you know, a substantial law enforcement presence on, you know, on the Capitol grounds.
I mean, after 9/11, it increased exponentially.
That's right.
Yeah.
That is right.
I mean, that's a big part of the story today, of course, is the security failure. It wasn't an intelligence failure, right? As you said, this was all very clearly projected, planned openly on various social media, on Parlay, the conservative alternative to Twitter, on Gab. They said very explicitly what they plan to do. And, you know, what is your take on what happened, given the just this very, very clear disparity in the policing between this event and Black Lives Matter protests, for example, and or other protests where, you know, other progressive protests where you see an abundance of police violence against protesters. There's a zero tolerance thing. You know, this was a thing where reportedly, I think 50 police were injured and they only made a few dozen arrests.
Yes, these people were allowed to leave the compound without being arrested. And, you know, I mean, the Capitol grounds, they were allowed to leave the Capitol grounds. There was even one instance of one of the Capitol police people inside the Capitol taking a selfie with one of the insurgents. I mean, it was really extraordinary. And I mean, I don't know exactly what happened. You know, I don't have the receipts on on what was going on with the law enforcement picture. But in terms of intelligence, I mean, don't these guys watch Twitter? I mean, it wasn't like you had to look really hard.
Right. You didn't even need a Parlay account. No. You could literally just look on Twitter where everybody was posting screenshots of people on Parlay saying that they were going to.
Absolutely.
It's maddening.
So it's really astonishing, and it does really illustrate, you know, the racialized nature of policing in the United States.
It's racialized, and it's also there's also an ideological bias.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
I mean, you know, and I will say this, and I don't want to, I definitely do not want to defend the Capitol Police, many of whom, by the way, it looks like the leadership of the Capitol Police is going to get fired. Chuck Schumer said today, if they're not out the door by the time he becomes majority leader, he's going to fire the head of the Capitol Police. But without defending them, I will say that, you know, they are frequently policing protests in DC. It happens all the time.
Right.
And they planned for a big protest, and they planned for, you know, potential fist fights and the usual thing that happens, because this wasn't the first gathering of Trumpers in DC, right? So they said, oh, we're going to have Proud Boys on the streets. They're going to get into some fracases. And I guess they just did not adjust their expectations. It's maddening. And you know, it really is an insult to all the people who faced injuries and arrests protesting in support of Black lives.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the kid gloves with which these people were handled, considering the violence that they committed, you know, not simply against people, but against this, you know, this icon of, you know, the Capitol building. It's the most visible building in Washington, D.C., for one thing.
Yeah.
And that it's a great national symbol, right? It's a huge national symbol. And that they were able to just like walk up the steps and break windows. I mean, that to me is just, I honestly cannot figure out how on earth that happened. Now, I mean, certainly there was a hang up with getting the National Guard deployed. Trump wouldn't do it. But why were they not dispatched to Capitol Hill? I mean, why were they not, you know, at that very moment?
Yeah, it's really a mystery. So let me ask you this. It seems like I was watching cable news, which I rarely do, but last night, whenever there's a big thing going on, I always pop on cable news.
Sure, sure.
Check in on how they're
interpreting,
they're interpreting events. And it seemed like there was an unusual degree of clarity, right? I mean, there was not a mealy-mouthed response in the legacy media. It seems like there is a line that was crossed that allows them to call this behavior out and call out Trump's behavior in inciting this violence in a way that they're hesitant to do normally for fear of being seen as partisan, right? So I think that this was such a extreme act, and you have, you know, Mick Mulvaney resigning, Elaine Chao resigned today, a number of other people did as well. It seems like there has been some shift. Are you sensing that?
Yes, I do think there's been a shift, but let us not forget there's only, you know, 2 weeks left in Trump's term. So, I mean, there's not the same level of access issues, right, that they're going to have by turning on him. I mean, that's a lot of, you know, the coin of the realm in mainstream political journalism is access to politicians and their staff to be sources. So, you know, it's refreshing on the one hand. On the other hand, it's maddening because it's not like this is the first time Trump has incited violence. It's not like, you know, that political journalists have yet to integrate any knowledge of the right and how the right wing moves into kind of the way that political journalists report. They are really reporting, their reporting model is really based on a world that no longer exists. So I think that is something really to start looking at in reporting circles, that there really needs to be an education for these political journalists, which is really, it's really hard to educate political journalists because they get to these spots, these beats, because they're presumed to know so much, right?
Yeah. Smart, savvy insiders.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know where we're going from here. So do you think that this is a inflection point for the conservative, the far right movement? I mean, I was thinking yesterday about what happened during the 90s after Oklahoma City, right? So there was this, you know, this growing, robust militia movement emerged in response to, I would say, the election of Bill Clinton.
Yeah, he was a symbol of the uncleansed, dope smoking, licentious hippie to them.
That's right. So he was the first, you know, post World War II vet president, basically, or era president. He had protested Vietnam, he had gone to Russia, all this stuff. So you had this real militia movement emerge, and then it culminated kind of in the Oklahoma City bombing. And after that, there was the militia movement was faced, basically went underground until the election of the first Democratic black president.
That's right.
And then it reemerged. So, I mean, do you think that there's a chance that this is going to be that kind of event?
I think things are escalating. I really do. I mean, people who want to believe that this is like the last gasp of Trumpism and the coalition of forces that comprise Trumpism, I'm sorry, but no. I mean, this is, you know, people keep saying, oh, is this a new chapter or is this the last gap? No, we're somewhere in the first third of the book, you know? I mean, this is neither the beginning nor the end. This has been building for quite some time. And the other thing about the right and these right-wing movements is that it doesn't, that they don't go away. Like, as you said, the militia movement sort of went underground, right? I mean, yeah. they go into remission for a time. They're like viruses. And then they come back even stronger. And, you know, mutant strains, right? So now you've got the situation where you also have these groups may act in concert with each other at events like this, but they also compete with each other. So, you know, that leads to escalation. That's the recipe for escalation. One group does something and, you know, they are credited with it. So the other group needs to do something. And of course, then you've got, you know, regional differences and all of that. So I think that we are, and I cannot, for as long as I've been covering these guys, you know, which is getting to be, you know, decades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still cannot quite foresee what it's going to look like going forward, only to say that there's going to be a lot of chaos and competition for, you know, for owning the libs points among all of these different groups.
Yeah. And people are on parlay are already calling for another armed attack on Washington on January 19th, the day before the inauguration.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Good times. Yeah.
Good times. Yeah. Well, good times. Good times. As far as prosecutions go, where do you see that? Where do you see that going from here? Because the conservative media today is trying to act as if this was Antifa. But the reality is that all of these people who were live streaming themselves from within the Capitol, I mean, they're not the sharpest tacks in the box, right? These are all well-known members of QAnon, well-known Proud Boys, people who are kind of leaders of the far-right movement. All
and even some of the neo-Nazis, like Baked Alaska and people like that,
Yeah, Baked Alaska posted a selfie in Nancy Pelosi's office.
Yeah.
He is, by the way, COVID positive.
Oh, perfect. I did not know that.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about four people dying in the insurrection, but it's going to be a lot more than that because you had over 1,000 people shouting at the top of their lungs.
Right.
With no masks. Mm-hmm. So in a month, we're going to have the rest of the deaths, a month or so, from this insurrection. We're going to have other deaths.
You're absolutely right.
It's inevitable.
And that's not prosecutable, which is, you know, too bad because you can never prove where you got it from.
Exactly.
You know, I got it at CPAC, but I can never prove that, you know. which is kind of perfect for my life that I
conservative. it's the MAGA virus. I mean, you know, it's not the Wuhan flu. It's the MAGA flu.
There you go. Yeah, got the rocket pneumonia and the MAGA flu for sure. Yeah, but you know, I think in terms of your question about prosecutions. I do think there is a real possibility for that, given who will be leading, not so much Merrick Garland, but the two other people who will be leading the Justice Department are great civil rights attorneys, which is Kristen Clark and Vinita Gupta. And if they can bring civil rights charges against these guys, if they, you know, and other charges, of course, just the vandalism and the breach and all of that. And, you know, whether or not the FBI can identify who left the pipe bombs around, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. We really escaped a much, you know, a bigger act of terrorism, I think. But I do think that there will be renewed, you'll have a different, very different Justice Department than we had before. I do feel... whether for better or worse, we'll have a reinvigorated FBI because they've been so demoralized by Trump that to be able to actually do their jobs, I think, is going to really increase their morale.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And there, I mean, there's cameras all over the Capitol complex, right? I mean, so there's also, you know, beyond civil rights charges, you had 50 cops injured. You figure there's going to be some people who are identified in those fracases and et cetera, et cetera. I wanted to just bring a story to your attention to talk about this other issue here, which is the usual flood of disinformation on the right that comes out after any event like this. There was a story in the Washington Times that was cited by Representative Matt Gaetz, who's a neo-fascist, I think it's fair to say, from Florida, one of the real Trump toadies in the House of Representatives. He shared the story. It said a facial recognition company had identified, had provided evidence that Antifa members were among the mob that stormed the Capitol. And this facial recognition company, which is called XR Vision, says they just never said anything like this. It's a completely false story. They just ran this story that's just made up.
Yeah. Well, living in the post-truth universe, you know, you and I used to talk about this back in the 2010s, right?
Yes.
That, you know, we were moving towards a post-fact society. But, you know, in the right wing, all he cares about is the right wing universe. And they're going to believe him. And that's, you know, that's the model that Trump has set for them.
That's right.
And that is how they, once you introduce an idea like that, that lets them off the hook or lets their compatriots off the hook and demonizes the left, they, you know, the people on that side are just, they just believe it. They just believe it. And you got to remember, you got all of these grannies on Facebook, you know, picking this stuff up, and they just believe it. So that's all he needs to do is inject the idea into the bloodstream of body politic and, you know, let it go. And this is the big gaslighting theme you're seeing all over the right today, that it was Antifa. And Michelle Bachmann, we've got a story on our page. Michelle Bachmann is saying that, I didn't realize Matt Gaetz was also saying that. And he's got this embellishment with this facial recognition notion. Crazy. But that kind of stuff, see, those kind of things where they introduce a specific fact, whether it's true or not, but the specificity is the thing that does it. Like when Trump was speaking at his rally, he was talking, you know, on and on, endless conspiracy theories about, you know, ballots being, you know, shoved under tables and, you know, shredded and all of that. But at one point he like introduced a figure about how many ballots had been, you know, weren't right. And it was like, I don't know, something like 92.37%, right? It's the number. Right. And it's because that kind of specificity conveys a notion of factualism and veracity. So I would suspect that that's why it was important to get this, you know, facial recognition company named in his assertions, Gates's assertions.
Yeah, I don't know that, you know, democracy can necessarily survive this, because we really do have this just divergent universe. We live in these completely different universes. And one of the things that I found so frustrating was all of the Republicans who were, so after the insurgency or whatever you want to call it, of course, Republicans were kind of put on the spot, those who had raised objections to counting the electors for Joe Biden were kind of on the spot. And there was some backpedaling for sure. But the one thing that they kept getting back to is like, my constituents have concerns.
Right.
And I found that just maddening, because these concerns are, there is no legitimacy to these concerns. And they're concerns that these same people have ginned up, right?
Right,
so
right.
Like, you gin up a bullshit story, and then you say, oh, my constituents are concerned about this bullshit story I invented.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly. It's this circular. It's this circular loop. And meanwhile, I mean, if you know, this is a point my colleague Peter Montgomery makes often, is that if you look at how this all began this whole elector thing, right? And calling these results illegitimate. It's racial, right? It was, where were all the spots Trump was saying that they were, you know, destroying ballots and all of that stuff, right?
They're all black votes.
They're all black cities. Yes. And so it was really, they used that racism to infuse a notion, you know, infuse it to go back to a very old Colbert word, truthiness, you know, into these narratives. I mean, people who are afraid of black people are going to believe this stuff.
Yeah.
And then you get to the situation with the police on Capitol Hill. And, you know, it's full circle on the race stuff. And I keep thinking, I think enslaved people built the Capitol building, if I'm not mistaken. They were they were involved in building it. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, Joshua. And I do take your point about, will democracy survive? I think it's going to take a long time, if ever, to overcome. I mean, I don't think you'll ever overcome disinformation campaigns and people who are gullible enough to believe them.
That's right.
But I do think that it does, what happens is something terrible happens because of disinformation campaigns. And then, you know, society gets to rebuild itself from the ashes. I mean, that's what we see in Germany, right? You know, which led to cataclysm, or the disinformation campaigns of the Nazis. Now, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen here, but I do think that in terms of dynamics, that's kind of the way these things tend to get corrected. Although the other point is, going back to your question about prosecutions, if you don't prosecute, the stuff just escalates, you know, just grows, you know, spills over the petri dish, right?
Yes.
But if you prosecute, you do tamp down the robustness of these kinds of movements.
Yeah. Yeah. Impunity always leads to more lawlessness. I mean, that's just very consistent.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The Nation has a piece up by Andrew McCormick. It has this, it's an account from the DC Capitol area, and he has this little bit in the end of his piece, quote, "This is not America," a woman said to a small group, her voice shaking. She was crying, hysterical. "They're shooting at us. They're supposed to shoot BLM, but they're shooting the Patriots." So
they're supposed to shoot BLM,
but they're shooting the Patriots.
Yeah. And then, you know, don't let us not forget the role of the religious right in all of this too. I mean, you have the fringier elements of the religious right, which is not a small constituency, by the way.
Yes.
You know, literally painting Black Lives Matter protesters as demons. Now, if you belong to a religion that believes in demons, and you meet a demon on the street, you are almost commanded to kill that demon, right? You want to slay the demon. So there's a lot of that very dangerous demonology rhetoric coming out of the right, the religious right. And it's a lot among this crowd that likes to call themselves prophets and whatnot, the kind of the Michelle Bachmann wing of right-wing evangelical Christianity.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were out there too. I mean, there was this older couple with shofars, you know, blowing shofars, because there's a whole wing that considers themselves quote unquote Messianic Jews, even though most of them are not ethnically Jewish. Right. And and they blow shofars. And I mean, it was just mind blowing. And they do these Jericho, they've been preparing for this for months by doing these Jericho marches. They call them Jericho marches, where they circle the Capitol, which sits on a pretty large piece of real estate, by the way. They march around it seven times, chanting and praying. And, you know, if you go back to the Bible story of Jericho, I mean, you know, it's like a slaughter, right? Yeah. About a slaughter. So, you know, this stuff is deep and it's very, very frightening. It's like when, you know, the alien abduction stuff. It's like when one of these stories gets a hold of the imagination of certain people who are inclined to conspiratorial thinking. Now you have this proliferation of conspiracy theories with QAnon to catch them all.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I took pictures of guys in QAnon shirts, you know, at which you can see at the Right Wing Watch Twitter feed, you know, at this thing. I mean, it was like they were all there.
Yeah, they were all there, which is a little bit like Charlottesville. It's a unite the right. I mean, that's they were all there. And just adding to their religious component, a lot of these people believe that Donald Trump was anointed by God.
Yes, they
do. And when you have this guy that was anointed by God, and then these godless people come and cheat and steal the election from you, it can drive you a little crazy. And you can, you know, we saw the results of that in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday. And we're going to continue to see it, I think, for the next couple of weeks, at least. And moving forward as well. But I mean, specifically the Stop the Steal stuff. I think that component will die down, obviously, after the
Well, they'll rebrand it.
They'll rebrand it. Yeah, it's going to be the new Tea Party 2.0. More crazier, more vicious,
right.
More reactionary. Yeah, we're in for a long few years. Trump has, can't put the genie back in that bottle.
It's right.
Not that easy. Right. Addie, I believe we are out of time, and I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
It's great to be with you, Joshua.
I'd also like to thank David Edwards, our producer and engineer, and the good folks at Raw Story and Alternet for supporting the show. Of course, I'd like to thank all of you good people for tuning in. Have a terrific week.
Beyond the black stump, a storm gathers tonight. Yesterday's children prepare for a fight. Man with black eyes is the haunting kind, with ice in his veins and a murderous mind. Fear is written all over her face.